One of the highlights of the Jewish year where memories are made is on Pesach night. A night where we recall the evil ways of Paro and the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, who wished to and were successful in causing tremendous, tremendous pain and suffering upon the Jewish people. Buried in the middle of the Haggadah and Magid is a very difficult paragraph. A paragraph that discusses a person that had nothing to do with Paro and his army. A man by the name of Laban. Selamad Mabikesh Laban Harami Lasos Yaakov Avinu. We're also familiar with this paragraph, but perhaps we do not think about it as we are anxiously rushing through the Haggadah at that point to get to Shulchan Aruch, the festive meal. But the Haggadah says, let us remind ourselves what Lavan wished to do to Yaakov, our forefather. What did he wish to do? Sheparo lo gazar el al zacharim. Paro, not such a bad guy. All he wanted to do was kill the boys, the infants, throwing them into the sea. Lavan, Bikesh l'akras hakol, Lavan so much worse. He intended to uproot everything. And we bring a proof to this. Shenamar, it says, Arami Ovid Avi, this man, this Aramean, this Arami, he sought to destroy my father. There are numerous questions on this paragraph. Perhaps the most difficult one is, what's Lavan doing over here? Lavan did not live in this generation. And the purpose of the Haggadah is to recall the miracles, the nisim and niflos that Hashem did for the Jewish people upon leaving Egypt. That is the focal point of the evening, to remind ourselves of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why then are we focused now on Lavan, someone who wasn't even there? Furthermore, if you would ask any child, who was worse? Evil King Pharaoh, the man who all he was cause slavery for the Jewish people, wishing to do harm, seeing miracle after miracle, plague after plague, and still not willing to let the Jewish people go. He wasn't so bad. Lavan! Who would think, which child would say that Lavan, the father-in-law of the great Yaakov Avinu, Lavan, the man who was able to, despite what we say about him, have two daughters that he raised by the name of Leah and Rachel, who ended up being matriarchs of the Jewish people for all future generations. Who would ever think that Lavan was worse? But that's what the Haggadah testifies. It says that Paro wasn't so bad. All he wished to do was to make a decree against the Zachar and the males. But Lavan, Bikesh la'akaras hakol. What does this mean? That he wanted la'akaras hakol. Where do we find anywhere that he wanted to do more than Paro? To kill the men, to kill the women, the children. We don't find that anywhere. So what is the significance? How is this possible that we can say such a thing? I believe the answer to all these questions must come from this week's Parsha. After Yaakov works in the house of Lavan, escapes with his family, not letting Lavan, his father-in-law, know about it, we find that Lavan overtakes them, and at the very end of our Parsha, he proposes a treaty with his son-in-law. They decided, for some reason, to gather a bunch of stones and to make some sort of a mound, a monument. And the Torah tells us that for some reason they wanted to name all these rocks piled up on top of one another. Says the Torah, V'yikra lo Lavan yigar sahadusa V'yakov karlo gal'ed. That Lavan chose and felt that the right name for all these rocks was Yigar Sahadusa. And Yaakov said, no, it's better that it should be called Gal-Aid. Now, both of these expressions, whether it's Yigar Sedus or Gal-Aid, they both mean that this Gal, this heap of rocks, will be an aid, will be some form of testimony and witness between ourselves of this treaty that we made. So, who cares what the real name is? What's the significance of this? It seems to be such a small little detail that they were disputing what to name the wing of a building that they just created. Who cares whether it's called the Agar Sadusa, whether or not it's called Gal Aid? See, I think this pasuk, this sentence, is extremely significant because it shows the real purpose, the mission of Lavan, his MO, his modus operandi. See, Lavan, his purpose was to cause Yaakov to completely assimilate, to throw away all the things that he considered to be holy and pure and sacred, the things that he was taught by his father, by Yitzchak, and by his grandfather, by Abraham. Lavan wished to destroy the Jewish people spiritually. The Haggadah testifies, and we all know, that when it came to Paro, Paro was clearly a Russia. He was certainly a wicked person, throwing innocent little babies into the sea, because he believed in mass genocide to get rid of the Jewish people, to kill us physically. But all he was able to do was to murder part of us, but the rest of us would grow stronger and live. Lavan, on the other hand, Bikeshel Akar Esakol. See, Lavan didn't want to kill us. There's nowhere in the text that this is supported, that this is found. Instead, says the Haggadah, he wished La'akor es hakol, to uproot everything. For Yaakov to throw away all of his traditions, all of his beliefs, to throw away his spirituality, and to become more like Lavan. And Lavan was a Rami. A Rami doesn't just mean the place where he lived or where he was born. A Rami means he was a cunning individual. He was a person who knew how to deceive others. And he did this throughout his life. Just like his name would suggest, Lavan is the color white. As though to say, look at me. I'm as white and pure as the snowflakes on the ground. I'm sinless. I am perfect. Lavan looked at his son-in-law and said, look at me. There's nothing wrong with you throwing away your traditions and embracing mine. Be a little bit more like me. Assimilate. So Lavan suggested this. He suggested to make a bris, a treaty, a covenant with his son-in-law, and to call the rocks Yigar Sadusa. And what he was really saying to his son-in-law was, I want you to adapt to my ways of thinking, my ways of talking. I want you to assimilate. But Yaakov did not accept this. He responded by calling it Gal Aid in Hebrew. He used his mama lashon. Says Ovadia ben Yaakov Sfarno, an Italian commentator who lived from 1475 to 1550, that what did Yaakov mean by this? Shelo shina es lashono. He did not change his speech. And it doesn't just mean that he continued speaking the way that he used to speak, his own language. But it means that he would not be willing to ever throw away his old traditions, the ways that he was taught. That Yaakov, even during a treaty, would not fully embrace the ways of Lavan. And this is what Rashi says. Rashi says, "Lira iata over, aval ata over lepragmatia." You see, these piles of stones, it was a form of a mechitza. a separation between Yaakov and Laban. But it was not a complete separation. After all, you could easily just walk around it and you could get to the next person. And Rashi's telling us that there is nothing wrong to be able to be over la pragmatia, to be able to be engaged in business with the outside world, even someone who is corrupt and deceitful, such as a Laban. But l'ra iata over, remember that heap of rocks. Let that be some form of a barrier between you and the corrupt outside world, the world of a Laban. To never interact l'ra in a way that will affect us spiritually by their potential negative corrupt ways. And I believe this is the significance of another pile of rocks found in the beginning of our parsha, that Yaakov left from Beersheba going to Charan. And the pasuk says, "Vayikach mi'avni ha'makom," that he took a bunch of stones, "V'yosim rashosav," and he put them around his head, "V'yishka b'makom ahu," and he went to sleep. Says Rashi, what's the significance about putting a bunch of rocks around his head, and how did they form them? "Asen k'min marzev," that he put them around like a bow, "Sabil l'rosho," around his head, "Shiyarim nechayos ros," because he was afraid of wild beasts. After all, he was in the middle of nowhere, exposed to the elements. So easily, a wild bear, a lion could come and attack him. And therefore, he surrounded himself with these rocks as a form of physical protection. And almost any child would look at this and have to ask the question, if you have a lion and a bear, or any wild animal that sees you lying on the ground and you have a bunch of rocks around your head, your whole body is still exposed. The lion can bite you in the arm. The bear can grab you by the leg and just rip you apart. What exactly does this mean? That he was afraid of these wild animals and therefore because of that, he decided to protect his head. How about the rest of his body? And I believe what Yaakov is saying and doing by the placing of these rocks around his head is Vayetse Yaakov, he's going out. He's going out and exposing himself to the world of Laban, the potential negative corrupt society of Laban. And he knows that he will, on some level, be obligated to be engaged for pragmatia, with business, to work with him. And his hands, and his legs, and his feet, and his body will be engaged in the same activities as Laban. But Yaakov is sending a tremendous message to himself and to us, that there's another part of the body that he always needs to protect, and that is his head. The ideas, the thoughts, the traditions that were placed into his mind, the beauty of the customs of his forefathers, he wished to preserve. And just as the Gal Eid was a form of a separation between him and Laban at the end of the Parsha, those rocks also were a form of protection. That although his body will be exposed to the outside world, he will make sure to separate his mind and his spiritual beliefs to that of the corrupt ways of Laban. See, Yaakov worked with Laban, but he knew his place. He kept that protection around his head, around his brain, and his beliefs. And this is the reason why we find in Vayishlach that he was able to thereafter say that Im Laban Harasha Garti, V'Taryag Mitzvah Shemarti. Although I interacted with a Laban, I was still able to observe and adhere to all 613 mitzvot. And Yaakov, I believe, therefore, is truly the model of what we are supposed to be like. we must not isolate ourselves from the world. But shaloshina et lashono, do not divert, do not adapt to their customs, do not act and be like them. In conclusion, when we think of this paragraph in the Haggadah, we must ask ourselves now between Lavan and Paro, which person is harder to detect? The man who physically attacks us, or the subtle spiritual attack? The Haggadah answers this question. The Haggadah is telling us that we were able to escape the clutches of Paro. We were able to leave Mitzrayim because Paro was a poison, a clear nemesis and enemy of the Jewish people, wishing to only do harm to us physically. And on Pesach night, as we gather around the table, having left Egypt, we say to ourselves that we had the ability to escape from a person who wishes to physically attack us. But do we have now the same ability to protect ourselves from the potential assimilation of a society of a Lavan? A Lavan who says, look, we're good. There's nothing wrong with embracing our ideals and our philosophies and our ways of life. I often say that the Jewish people survived thousands of years of oppression in Europe. But it's a wonder if we'll survive even 100 years of tolerance in America. And this is the purpose of this paragraph in the Haggadah. We can escape the clutches of a Paro. But there are other enemies. The enemies that are more subtle, similar to that of a Lavan, who wish for us to la'akar sakol, to throw away everything that we always felt and understood was important. We have to be concerned about those people just as much, if not more. As we approach Hanukkah, we're now in the month of Kislev, a holiday in which we celebrate the defeat of the Avadim, the Syrian Greeks. We must realize that the war is not over. Just like Lavan, the Avadim wished la'akar es hakol, for us to assimilate into their culture. And in the year 2007, when someone approaches us and says, Vayikra lo yagar sadusa, we're the same. For us, we must answer that we will call it gal'ed. No, we are not the same. Instead, we are wonderfully different. Good Shabbat.